This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Let's take a closer look at the new federal cabinet. Stephen Guilbeault is taking over as Canada's environment minister. Minister Guilbeault says that cooperation will be integral in dealing with climate change.
But they're also telling us we need to do more. They want us to do more. They want us to go faster. And we need to do that by working together all across the country. Climate change affects us all from coast to coast to coast. And we've seen last summer, certainly in Canada, but not just in Canada, how the impacts of climate change are becoming more and more important as years go by.
Former Environment Minister Jonathan Wilkinson is moving over to the Natural Resources portfolio. Former Indigenous Services Minister Mark Miller is shifting over to a new portfolio as Minister for Crown Indigenous Affairs. He says his focus during the pandemic was to keep people alive, and the greatest impediment was not a lack of resources, but a lack of trust. He hopes he's now built up a degree of trust with First Nations that he can bring to his new role.
This relationship started with land. The relationship has been broken because of land theft. And it's time to give land back. And that's just the reality of it. It's easily said, it's more difficultly done.
Former Health Minister Patty Hajdu is taking on the Indigenous Services file, and Chrystia Freeland is staying on in her role as Deputy Prime Minister and the Minister of Finance. Freeland had previously been one of the most prominent voices advocating for the government's national daycare program. For his perspective on this and the new cabinet, we are joined by veteran political correspondent Craig Oliver. Hey, good morning, Craig. How are you?
Good morning, Dave. I'm fine. Thank you.
So let's start here with a big, broad question. Then we can jump into some specifics. Mm-hmm. But what's the big picture here? What do these cabinet appointments indicate to you?
Dave, let me put a headline on this story for you. Just Watch Me 2.0. In other words, as you may be aware, when Pierre Trudeau was in trouble, he threw caution to the winds and took a chance to get himself out of it. His son, Justin, is now doing the same thing. The whole purpose of this cabinet shuffle is to lock in a legacy for Trudeau on the three great issues which are so important to him. And if you noticed, each of the leaders of the three areas we're talking about, which are so important to Trudeau, and that would be climate, First Nations, and daycare, each of the leaders has been thrown out and new people brought in. And Trudeau is taking a lot of risks here with this shuffle, putting people who are in many cases unexperienced totally with the department they're going to be heading. It's depending on their judgment badly. There are a lot of risks in this cabinet shuffle. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about those three areas of priority, because as you mentioned, there's new faces in the big file, but perhaps a little bit of continuity in a tandem. So what are your expectations when it comes to the new environment minister, Stephen Guilbeault, as well as Jonathan Wilkinson as a tandem? Wilkinson will be in the natural resources file. What are your expectations for them as a tandem on the climate front?
Guilbeault himself is a red flag to Alberta and to the resource nations, resource provinces in any big way. The Conservatives have already dubbed him a loony. Well, Guilbeault is an extreme environmental fighter and has been for years. He was in the any number of organizations.
It was Greenpeace in Quebec that he headed up.
Yeah, and he also organized another group in Quebec. He climbed the tower in CN Tower in Toronto to demonstrate. He's been over the top in the minds of many people and someone who is not willing to compromise, and he's the new environment minister. Now you compare that with the new job in the West in natural resources, and that minister is now going to have to cooperate with him. And he won't be able to do what these ministers of natural resources have been told to do in the past, which is to deal with the energy industry and try not to upset them too much. But now he is committed also to the Trudeau agenda of getting a lot done. And you can see that they have no choice. They're talking about getting rid of, 40% of greenhouse gases in only 10 years. To do that, they're going to have to make significant changes that a lot of Canadians aren't going to like. This is going to be a very difficult one for the Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm. Let's jump over to the important conversation we're having in regards to reconciliation, as Mark Miller replaced Carolyn Bennett in the Crown Indigenous Relations file, while the former Health Minister, Patty Haidu, replaced him in Indigenous Services. How do you imagine they'll be able to navigate this next crucial phase of reconciliation?
Well, Trudeau thinks he's put himself in a much better position now to deal with that, with a new minister who has been something of an achiever in cabinet. I think that is the hope, at least. There's a long way to go on this yet, even including a very difficult decision the government has to make about human rights and the survivors of the Indian residential schools and the money they feel that is owed to them. And the courts agreed. The federal government has to make a decision whether to appeal that. And as the Conservatives are saying, quit fighting with the children. And this is a demand everywhere Trudeau went from First Nations. Mm-hmm. This is going to tell a lot about where things are at.
That's right. The Conservatives have told him to stop fighting it, as have the NDP. We've finally found unanimity amongst Canadian politicians. Craig, let's take a moment to talk about Chrystia Freeland. Now, we did talk about her last week in regard to whether or not she would maintain her two roles as Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Finance. But, Craig, does it appear now that she's clearly the second most important figure in the government, especially considering that she wields the power of the purse and has been front and center in that national daycare conversation?
Yeah, she will be the minister also of national daycare to make that happen across the country. And there's no doubt about that. But also, don't forget this. She's also setting herself up, and the prime minister is, for a prime ministerial role, or at least to run for it, if Trudeau leaves. And that's still a very big if. Now, Trudeau says he's not going to leave. He's going to stick with this. But he doesn't have a lot of time to make a decision. At the most, minority governments only last about 2 years. So Trudeau can't leave the party hanging. He's going to have to make a decision, which he says he's already made, I doubt it, about where he's going.
Mm-hmm. Well, Craig, let's jump into some of the surprises we saw yesterday. Former Minister of Foreign Affairs Mark Garneau is out of that role and out of cabinet completely. Garneau is replaced by Melanie Joly. Joly referenced Lester B. Pearson as she laid out her vision for the position.
And of course, the world has changed since Lester B. Pearson, but the vision that we will have at Global Affairs is one that takes into account that very strategic work that Canada is doing across the world, and it will be a mix of humility and audacity.
Craig, Garneau out completely of cabinet. Mélanie Joly taking over this important position at Foreign Affairs. Is this the biggest surprise?
I think it is. I absolutely think it is. First on Garneau, this is a young cabinet, a very urban cabinet, a with it, a woke cabinet, if you like. That's what how they would like to see themselves. And I guess there just wasn't room for an old timer, a famous Canadian, like the person who's just been dumped as foreign minister. I hope they haven't humiliated this great man. Obviously, there's a big problem there. I think he expected to be in cabinet, probably with the same job he already had in foreign affairs. And I think it sounds like the government is trying to work out some kind of an offer for him. They've dropped to the media that maybe it would be the Canadian ambassador in Paris, whatever. He hasn't said a word. I think there's a lot of unhappiness in the background there. As for the new minister, feel for the Foreign Affairs Department. There are 6,000 people working for that department. They've had five new ministries in 6 years. And they're complaining bitterly that they can never really get their feet, that they can't do the kind of jobs they should be doing. And now they've got a minister who, as far as I know, knows nothing at all, really, about foreign policy, and sounded it when she talked to the media briefly yesterday.
Craig, someone who does seem to have a good grasp on her file is Anita Anand, named Minister of Defense. Minister Anand warned there is no magical solution to the problem the armed forces are facing.
I want to assure everyone that I will put in the necessary work for as long as it takes to get this done. As I have said, I am thorough, I am determined, I am dogged, and I am results-oriented, and I will be dedicating all of my energies towards this task and this position.
Minister Anand had previously been in charge of procurement and played a huge role in securing Canada's vaccine supply. In that time, she dealt with military officials as part of the rollout. Craig, do you imagine that her performance on that tricky file is why she's been tabbed to take on this role at a crucial time while the military continues to be plagued with high-profile cases of sexual misconduct?
Dave, I don't think I have to imagine it. People in the government have made it clear that she did such a great job on getting those vaccines. Remember that the Conservatives at one point said it'd be 9 years at the rate the government was going. They predicted a failure to get vaccines that Canadians needed to keep themselves going and keep themselves alive, if you like. But she straightened all that out, and she did what pretty much everyone agrees was a pretty terrific job. And as you've just observed, in the process of doing all that, she was also dealing with the military. And so she understands that whole command and control operation they run there. But there was only one choice in terms of gender. It had to be a woman taking on defense. This is not the first time in history. It's the second time. Kim Campbell did it for a short time. So I think she's in a good position to force the kind of changes the department needs. And a lot of people could not have done that and done it, I think, with the ability she has.
Craig, a file that's very relevant to our audience is the Minister of Disability Inclusion, Employment and Workforce Development, Carla Qualtrough, staying on in that position. Minister Qualtrough has been Minister of Disability since the creation of the position. Is this something of an affirmation of the work that she's done on that file?
It absolutely is. She may not have wanted a change. She has to come in from Vancouver all the time. It's a very stressful job for her. I'm not sure that she wanted a change. At no point did anybody hint that she did. She's very, very committed to the persons with disability issue and with others. I think one of the things she may press ahead on is trying to improve the income that's available for persons of disabilities. Mm-hmm. I think that is in the past been something she cares about. But all of these issues, as we know, but she's still got personnel responsibilities too. But, I mean, we're all happy to have her stay where she is, and I hope she's not disappointed, but I don't think so.
Yeah, she's really built that portfolio up from the ground and built so many solid relationships over the course of the last 6 years, developing those relationships with stakeholders. I think that it's probably an important continuity while they're still working on the Accessible Canada Act and new legislation as well. So it does make some sense. Again, I'm sure in her life she has big aspirations, but at certain points when you're on a good track and working well, sometimes you don't mess with good, right? There's an expression that I can't use on the air, but you don't mess with happy sometimes. So to speak.
Right.
Hey, Craig,
Yeah. This
is not the biggest cabinet in the history of Canada, but it is Justin Trudeau's biggest cabinet at 39 members. Is a bigger cabinet necessarily a better cabinet?
No. Smaller ones tend to be maybe a little more efficient. But what's important here, Dave, is the judgment of the people who are put in these jobs. You can succeed or you can fail, but you will not succeed if you are not a person of good judgment. And that's why some of these young woke people who, make you feel like saying, I mean, they're such urbanites. It's a very urban, very aggressive, very activist cabinet. But will they be making the right decisions when they have to? That's the whole question. It's all about good judgment when they have to decide on important things to the lives of Canadians.
Craig, let's shift gears quickly at the end here towards provincial politics that have a taste for federal political implications. Alberta Premier Jason Kenney says the results of a provincial referendum show a majority of voters reject the federal equalization program. A referendum during the municipal election a few weeks ago asked voters if they want to see the principle of equalization removed from the Constitution, and 62% voted in favor. Let's hear from Jason Kenney, who says the message is clear.
This is a powerful statement today, a democratic statement where Albertans are demanding to be respected. They're demanding that the jurisdiction of this province under the Canadian Constitution be respected.
It's all fine and dandy that over 60% of Albertans want this equalization system changed, Craig, but does this referendum result actually mean anything, or are we in the world of political pandering?
It's meaningless, and it will be treated by the federal government as it is, meaningless. The fact is the province doesn't have any power under the Constitution to change anything like what he's claiming. I think this is a desperate effort by the Alberta Premier once again to change the focus of the news away from himself and the failings in terms of healthcare and the failings in terms of the pandemic and try to thrust it on somewhere else, somewhere. And I think once again, he's behind, you know, he's really around behind the curve, and it damages him. It's just not realistic. And it's bogus. Also, by the way, there was a very low turnout for this, these municipal election votes that it was tied to. So that's not really a judgment about whether, Albertans as a group would go overboard about this. And 61% wasn't that great. So even that isn't convincing. But the fact is, the premier can't do anything about it. He knows he can't do anything about it. He can change all the legislation he wants. That doesn't change the constitutional facts that seven other Canadian provinces would have to agree to anything like the kind of change that he's demanding. And by the way, one of the reasons Alberta pays more is because historically Albertans have been higher per capita incomes than the rest of the country because of oil and gas. That may not be as true now, but it's still relatively true.
And the one note that I'll add, Craig, is that Mr. Kenney is very much aware of how equalization works because he was a federal cabinet minister in the Harper government when the most recent formula was worked out. He was at the table, so he knows how this works.
He was at the table, but maybe he wasn't listening, Dave. You and I don't know.
That's a good point. You always catch me on that speculation, Craig. Hey, Craig, thank you for this. It's always a delight catching up. Have yourself a great week, and we will talk to you next Wednesday.
You will, Dave. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.